go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steven.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Chris, how the hell's it going?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, brother?
I'm all right. Can't complain.
That's good.
Trucking along.
Well, why don't we just go ahead and jump right into this episode? Why beat around the bush? Let's just get right in.
Yeah. Works for me.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it. I'm gonna go do it!
All right, so what do we have in store for this week's episode, Steve?
Well, this week on Deep Space High, we are going over The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 4. The Sanctuary.
Yeah, so our opening scene, we kind of see what Blue Krill, what almost looks like, I don't know what they're, is it like poppy farms like in Vietnam or something? Like what are they called, the rice farms? Because that's what it looks like, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of looks like that, but it looks like they're farming shrimp.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like. Yeah, it's funny because they called it Krill, and I thought of the Orville, because the main bad guys in that are called Krill.
Yeah, maybe that's their origin. Long
it's all tied. They were shrimp once in the Star Wars universe, and they made their way up to the bad guys on the Orville universe.
Yep. It's all connected.
But yeah, there's the first scene's interesting because it starts off on that farm, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And then obviously some raiders come in, which pillage the farm, take their entire harvest, which I find hard to believe.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just didn't seem like they got away with that much because no one got hurt, and they walked away with, you know, each person had like a couple bags or worth of stuff. So just didn't seem like their entire harvest.
Well, I'm sure that you know, with everybody running away, nobody really put up much of a fight. They were just able to just grab everything easier. Yeah, they were showing in those scenes, but there was a lot afterwards that they don't really talk about later in the episode or what happens in between. I guess we're going to jump ahead a little bit when they ask for Mando's help later in the episode to then. There was a bit of time happened. So we don't know how long it took for them to go back into the town. You know what I mean?
True. Don't know how many times they were able to pillage it. You just saw the one.
Brief, you know, first 5 minutes of it.
Yeah. If that. Yeah, and this is an interesting layout because for a second I thought, well, you know, they have a bunch of little ponds broken out in like probably 2 foot, 2 to 3 foot grass ways that you could walk in between. But if it was all one giant pond and all one moat, there's no one coming to pillage that village.
Yeah, that's true.
But then again, you know, then you're kind of stuck on an island without a boat or something. I'm sure that would be, can those little hover speeders go across water?
I don't think they can. I don't know, actually.
It'd probably be a good thing to understand how those work.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I'm saying, then, you know, you don't have to really worry about anyone pillaging the village, though.
But I would imagine that it would use like some kind of like hover technology where it uses the ground to push itself up somehow. And I would imagine that if it worked over water, it wouldn't get that same push, so it wouldn't work as well. Or at least that's what I would think.
I always thought it was some anti-grav stuff. Because you see, you know, in Star Wars, they have speeders, they have land speeder, you know, they have like land transports and it all hovers, and even I mean it's constantly hovering, so unless you deactivate something, you never really see them not hovering. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean it kind of does make sense, but I'm not even entirely sure how anti-gravity technology works, or at least in that context.
I don't know. I just know, like, when I was looking at, when you look at these kind of speeders and all this fun stuff, you don't see anything thrusting towards the ground to keep it hovering like you would nowadays.
Right.
You just kind of see it floating there. So it's got to be some sort of anti-gravity or some sort of repulsing device. So
I don't know.
Don't know. Maybe it's TBD. I don't know. We don't have a lot of information on the technology of the Star Wars universe like that.
No, because I was thinking that same thing when I saw the guild tracker again. And I looked at it pretty closely and I'm like, how the fuck does that thing work? I mean, it looks like just an antenna with a red button that just flashes. And it's a pretty constant flash. And the beeping noise are pretty consistent. You know, it doesn't really change much.
I know when you get closer, you're pointing at the target, I think the tones change. I don't know. It's probably one of those things where you got to know how to read it to understand it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a... just looking at it, I don't understand it.
Yeah, and it makes no sense. It just seems like a simple compass, and it's probably right. You know, the longer the beeps, the obvious
planets away.
I don't know. There's still a lot of information we have to find out about this. Some of this tech.
Yeah, they don't really explain a lot. They kind of leave everything a mystery, which can be nice in some aspects, but kind of a pain in the ass in others.
Let's talk. We can talk about the next scene after this, after the village gets pillaged. You go back to Mando and Baby Yoda being adorable as all shit because he's doing what any typical child would do, is touching everything he can.
Oh, I know. I laughed so freaking hard rewatching this because I rewatched this again before doing this episode. And I'm just, I got super fucking stoned before watching it, so I'm just laughing. I just can't stop laughing. I'm laughing for like 5 minutes, and it's not even that funny, but it was just so perfectly done. Like, he's just not even looking, just boop, flips the wrong switch. I'm just like, well, yeah, dying
it's one of those things where it's like any kid does that. That could be, that's, you know, that's relatable to any parent and child, because parents are like, no, don't touch that, and then the child just looks at him and touches it. It's like,
yeah, right. You. But they did it so perfectly here. That it was just, you know, steak sauce, A1, you know, like, I it wasn't that funny, but I'm fucking on the ground laughing and shit was funny as hell, just from the situational irony.
Yeah.
And adorableness from Baby Yoda.
Yeah, and that's when they find out this planet that they're gonna attempt to hide out on, which is called Sorgon, kind of like Zordon from Power Rangers, but said a little differently.
That's so, actually not a bad connection.
Yeah, said similarly. It's one of those, Mando described it as, there's no starports, no large population density, which means, you know, the planet's population is relatively spread out, and then there is no industry. So it's pretty much what a very
empty
early
planet
type Earth,
pretty much,
which is weird.
Earth
given
with
all
no
this,
life.
Given all its resources, I mean, it's not like it was Tatooine, a desert planet. I mean,
yeah,
sitting here have a semi-tropical climate.
Lush, green, yeah.
Green, I'm sure there's lakes and stuff. They're obviously farming fish, so.
Yeah, what the fuck is wrong with the people of Tatooine? Just go to this planet. Maybe, well, then again, maybe it's just like a fraction of the size. I mean, it could just be a tiny planet.
Yeah, it could be the size of the moon, but even later in the episode, Cara Dune, who we meet in later scenes, she's like, this is a big planet. Y'all can just go somewhere else and the raiders won't follow you. They're like, no, this is our home. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay. They land, go to... I was going to re-walk the story, but I was like, let me not re-walk the story. So once they land on this planet, get into the bar, you see when Baby Yoda's walking in, and I'm only retelling this because I'm going to bring up an Easter egg. Mando and Baby Yoda walk into the bar, you know, Baby Yoda's waddling his ass around, and then you see this cat-looking thing. And I was like, that thing looks familiar. And then it hit me that is a... I think it's called a Loth Cat or a Lothal Cat. No, it's got to be a Loth Cat from the show Rebels.
I thought you were going to say Garfield.
No. I mean, it kind of does look like that. It, no. I mean, it kind of does look like Garfield.
He just ate too much lasagna.
Could have been. But no, it's a Loth Cat from Star Wars Rebels.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Well, you didn't know that.
Because I haven't seen Rebels.
Yeah, exactly. And I know other Star Wars fans listening will have seen Rebels.
That is true.
So they will understand that Easter egg. But yeah, that's when you get another... I mean, let's talk about the episode, not so much the plot as of right now. You get some pretty decent acting and some more fights because, you know, Mando runs into Cara Dune, who is an ex-shock trooper, and she thinks she's hunting him. So they have a pretty freaking epic short, but an epic fight outside of this cantina or whatever. And then it ends in a draw with them, like literally both drawing their pistols on each other, and then Baby Yoda's sipping some soup. It's just
the most adorable thing ever. I mean, it's like you get a badass fucking fight. Like, that was a great fight scene too. Like, the choreography was, again, steak sauce. Like, hats off to them, because that was a great fight. And then you just get Baby Yoda just sitting there all adorable, drinking his little tea, just like, what you doing?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just perfect. You can't ask for any better directing.
Yeah, it was great. And Dallas Bryce Howard, who was Ron Howard's daughter, was the director of this episode.
Interesting.
But
god damn, I'm saying that a lot.
Fascinating. To talk more, less about the plot, more about, you know, kind of some of the tech in it. When Mando comes out, he switches on, I mean, it seems like a thermal, you know, thermal imaging to where he tracks Cara Dune's footprints out of the bar and where she was going.
Well, is that just how he normally sees things?
No, I don't think it is, because if you see, he touches the side of his helmet and changes the setting. So I'm thinking, how many different settings does he have, first of all?
Yeah, so how does it normally look?
I don't know. I'm thinking normally it's like wearing sunglasses all the time because it's, you know, got a dark tint to it.
Or is it like, you know, Tony Stark, Iron Man, you got a, in, you know, face screen in the inside to where you can see everything going?
Who knows? Maybe one day they'll cover that.
Maybe.
But here's my point that I want to bring up. He has a flashlight on the side of his helmet because we saw it in episode 2 when he enters the, shit, what was that beast called? The Mudhorn. When he enters the Mudhorn's cave. So we know he has a flashlight on the side. How come he doesn't have a night vision setting?
I'm sure he does.
But how come he didn't use it? How come he uses a flashlight?
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't then. That's a good point.
My guess is because you can't see him act in the dark. So they put a light on the side of him so you can kind of see him. But I still think, you know, they gave you a brief image where the TV screen was pretty much what you saw. I would have liked in that second episode him to have night vision and you just see what he saw instead of him with a flashlight walking through the cave. But that's just my thoughts.
Well, I mean, they wanted to do the dramatic scene with the flashlight shining on the eye to wake him up and for the horn. And I think that's probably why they did it, not the night vision.
True, but you possibly could have had a similar scene where, you know, you're kind of looking over the eye with the night vision, and then next thing you know, you kind of step on something somewhat loud, you wake it up, and the eye shoots open.
I don't know. I don't think it would have been as dramatic of a scene. And I think they wanted to build that suspense.
With the creative minds they had on this show, they could have found a way to do that and made it work.
They could have. But maybe they didn't really care. Maybe they just liked this one better.
That doesn't sound like, you know, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, because they care. But we mentioned her a couple times. You get introduced to a new character here. Lovely Cara Dune, who was, like I said, ex-shock trooper for the Rebel Alliance.
Okay, I got a question. Is it less angry Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah, same actress.
I knew it. And for those of you who don't know, Less Angry Rosie O'Donnell's reference from Deadpool, the first one. Yeah, the first one. Yeah. So it's interesting. She almost looks like she lost a little weight for this too.
I don't know. Miss Gina Carano, which she is great in her fight choreography, which she should be for being an ex-MMA fighter. MMA fighter.
But here's what I'm confused about. Why was she hiding out?
Well, she was kind of explaining that in the scene that her and Mando were sitting down talking. And she was a part of the Rebel Alliance, did some work after. Well, she kind of explained it like she was a hired gun for the Rebel Alliance. And then once they kind of were cleaning up a lot of the Empire and then democracy took over for the New Republic, that there wasn't much action going on, and it seemed like it portrayed her as a deserter. And I think that might be why she's being sought after.
Could be.
But it doesn't, I don't think it specifically states why she's on the run.
Yeah, because that was the part that confused me. Like, I just thought I was tying and I missed it, but that whole scene.
Chances are you were.
I probably was. Probably still am. I'll find out when we listen to the episode. but I lost my train of thought. Okay, maybe I am. All right. Yeah, so what were we talking about?
Well, we were talking about the Cara Dune, Gina Carano's character. And it's funny. Or it's not funny. It's interesting. Because in this conversation she's having with Mando, she's like, I was here first. You got to get the fuck out of here. And Mando looks at Baby Yoda and is like, well, I guess we better find a new planet. And I was like, that's a whole planet. I mean, you could hide on the fucking other side and still chances are no one's going to find you.
Yeah, you could. But the odds are if they're both being hunted, then the hunter's going to find one of them. You got, you know, two times more likely for them to find him. Well, I guess three times. No, one and a half time? You know what I mean? Because there's now, instead of one of them on that planet that people are searching for, there's now three of them. You know, you got Mando and Baby Yoda.
But yeah, you say, but if you say, oh, this planet's the size of the Earth, just saying, you know, they could be down in Australia and, you know, no one would ever know. I mean, it's just funny because it goes back to, you know, as we said earlier in our episode, as they covered later in this episode, once they get hired, she describes the planet as a fairly big place. And it's like, well, you just wanted Mando to leave because it didn't seem big enough. But yet for the farmers, it is big enough to get away from these damn marauders. Gosh, man, you would think I hosted a podcast or something.
You would think.
it's like I can't talk.
It's all right. I'm pretty out of it today too, so don't feel bad. It's gonna be an interesting episode, that's for sure.
It'll be a different, and you know, the energy level's different. I can't talk to save my life,
and I'm pretty chilled out right now.
Yeah, it is what it is. We'll get through it. Long story short of it is Mando gets ready to leave when he gets approached by these farmers. They hire him, and it's pretty much a, you know, you shelter me for a little bit, I'll help you fight these marauders. And then he goes and recruits Cara with the money that they were going to pay him with. And then the two of them come up with a plan to fight off the marauders. So that's where the plot's building. It's interesting because Mando, and it's an interesting seeing him team up with somebody. And, you know, it's kind of a character building episode for Mando because you learn a lot about his culture and him. You know, he cares about these people, even though he's a pretty hardened bounty hunter who's like, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold. Got no preference. Because he came off as the hard ass the first couple episodes.
Yeah, you did. Well, and I think it's probably just Baby Yoda softening him up. I mean, maybe, fuck, how could it not?
But if you look at it too, the farm is, there's like 20 kids there.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's an older generation of people. I'm talking, most of these people look like they're in their late 20s to mid 40s.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I thought it was funny because one of the chicks has got the hots for Mando in this village.
Yep.
And she's pretty hot too. So good for Mando, even though she can't even see his face. So
yeah.
I thought it was funny how when they get to the point to where they're trying to set everything up and defend the village, she's the only one in the entire village that knows how to shoot.
Well, yeah, not only that, I mean...
Or has prior experience shooting, I should say.
When they're giving that montage, they decide after Kara was like, okay, we can't talk him out of this, so we're going to train. Or Mando's like, we'll just train him. You know, there's a montage where Kara's training for like hand-to-hand combat and Mando's like the shooting instructor. And it's like everyone's missing and everyone's missing pretty bad. And this lady is like bullseye every time.
Well, I think you missed the scene because like literally the scene right before that, Mando's like, okay, how many of you have ever shot a weapon before? And she was the only one who raised her hand.
And right. I get that. But here's my thing. You know, who knows the last time she's had training, how much training she could be. I mean, from the looks of her shot, she looks like an expert sharpshooter. But if you put down a gun for an extended period of time and pick it back up, you're not going to hit dead center every time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. And then who taught her to shoot? Better question.
Who taught her how she knew to begin with? I mean, like, I don't know. There's more to this lady's backstory than we obviously get because she's such a minor character, but... She mm-hmm. obviously had a squabble somewhere. And then talking about this scene, they obviously don't have any firearms. So every one of those firearms and blasters, they have to be Mando's.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Unless Kara is lugging around. Unless Kara is lugging around. I know she maybe has two. She at least has her blaster. But mm-hmm. it's like he's handing out... That's
a lot of guns. And you know what? When anybody asks you why you need so many guns, you just point to this scene right there. That's why you got it in case you need to defend yourself from a village and you're the only one who knows how to shoot a gun.
Well, I mean, granted.
Or you're the only one who owns a gun.
Well, Mandalorian's a bounty hunter, so he's obviously going to have a variety of weapons, but yeah.
Part of his religion.
So, I guess part of that barge, when they ended up hiring him, he must have unloaded his little armory he had on there.
Must have. Well, then again, he was preparing for, you know, to deal with these marauders. Like, he knew what to expect, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, all of his guns? He knew he was going to need them, but it's like...
But it's a lot.
I don't know where I was going with that. It's a lot. And it's something, as many times as I've seen this episode, it didn't hit me that all of those have to be the Mandalorian's guns.
Yeah. I thought that was awesome. Something to aspire to own that many guns.
Yeah. Something to aspire to. So one thing, you know, as the climax starts to build, the Kara and Mando go scavenging. You know, this is kind of earlier in the episode, but they find out that these raiders have an AT-ST. And then that's mm-hmm. when Kara tries to talk him out and kind of relocating, but Mando's like, no, we'll stop it. And, you know, I gotta stop saying you know so much. And so when Kara and Mando start to set the trap, lay the bait, so they go and attack their village, come out. You know, they get chased back by this AT-ST. First of all, I want to know where they got this damn Imperial Walker.
Okay.
Second of all.
Go ahead.
What? I was going to say, when it comes up to the farms, this thing looks massive. Like, our only references to this prior to it, let's see, definitely in Return of the Jedi.
As far as I know, it was only in the Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, because we had the
AT-ATs. When it comes to live action.
Yeah, because we have the AT-ATs in 5 and it's 6. And I don't think we see any in 1. Nope. Or, sorry, 1 is in 4.
Right.
So, yeah, okay. Our only other reference to it is that, and they don't look that massive.
Yeah, no, they're not that big. I mean, they're actually pretty good size. It might just be from that camera angle and how they had to do the shoot, and it just looks smaller.
You mean it looks bigger?
Or, yeah, I mean, it just, or we perceived it as being smaller than it probably would be in this context.
Oh, yeah, in Return of the Jedi. Because, well, like, I looked it up on StarWars.com, and they read off it is 8.6 meters, which for those of us in the United States who don't understand meters, just under 29 feet. But I'm telling you, that thing looks like it was, it's pretty big, you know. For baseball fans out there, the green monster out in Fenway is 30 feet tall. Hmm. Okay, yeah, yeah. Once you put it in that perspective, it makes a little more sense.
Well, I guess now you're starting to get it.
Well, because in, like, I don't know, they just didn't seem that big in Return of the Jedi.
Like I was saying, I just think it was the limited graphics and the camera angle, because they had to, they couldn't do it computer animation, so they had to actually, like, make this shit. And, like, hand do it. Yeah. So they had it at a higher angle, and they just perceived it as smaller.
Could have been.
But here's my problem with the scene. Okay, so here's my problem with their whole plan. Because, I don't know if you noticed this, but when they were coming out of the tent and they were blowing shit up, I noticed that the AT-ST was off. And it just kind of almost like turned on and rose up above them. I thought at first it was going to be like a dramatic, like they were trying to be a dramatic as in when it was a trap. But then when I started to think about it, all these guys were fucking just drinking beer, sitting around the campfire, chilling until they started to walk into the tent and notice that Mando and what's her name, Kara, was in there. And then they just started slowly coming in. So I'm thinking, one of these guys was like, fuck, I'm going to go in the AT-ST and just start shooting shit up, because that's what I would do. And then why would you go and blow this up instead of just going after the AT-ST and just killing them all and steal the damn thing?
Well,
rather than lure it into a trap and then try and hopefully take it down, when you could just steal it like Chewbacca did.
Yeah, I see your point. And I think my answer to your question would be that most likely the AT-ST would be relatively secured, and then you would have to search the camp for it, whereas you can just go into a building in the camp, cause a diversion, or attack it, and hopefully someone will get into it and, you know, come after you.
Yeah, but I mean, it was literally like right behind that tent.
Well, yeah,
like right on top of that little hill. Like it would not have been hard to see that, or to at least stumble upon that.
Yeah, but if that happened, the episode would have been 20 minutes shorter, so couldn't have
that's true, and it was only 35 minutes long, so
yeah, it was already a pretty short episode.
Well,
so yeah, I mean, that did cross my mind, but I thought of it as it's probably under pretty tight security, so
yeah. Well, I just figured they were just trying to be dramatic.
Well, then you don't have all these extra, I almost call them village people, but farmers. You wouldn't have them anything to do. It would just be Kara and Mando to the rescue, knocking people out.
What's wrong with that?
In your words, it's not as dramatic.
That's fair. Well, here's another thing that I noticed. You noticed that when they put the bomb to set up the diversion, that timer lasted for a real freaking long time. And then when they sprang the trap, he used the same explosive device to blow up the AT-ST. And then it blew up like instantaneously.
I'm thinking, obviously, they have to have some sort of adjustable timers. And I think they probably wanted to give themselves enough time to set the explosives, maybe cause some firefights out in the middle of camp, and then have it explode, and then hopefully the AT-ST will start coming, or AT-ST will start coming after them. But you know, it's two things. It's got to have an adjustable timer on it. The other thing is, once the thing goes down, he pulls it out, starts the timer, runs all the way up there, and then throws it into the AT-ST. You didn't catch that part, now, did you?
Which part? The part where he ran it out with the AT-ST?
No, where he starts. He starts the timer when he gets up and takes off to go throw it into the thing.
Yeah, I mean, but then he was only like 3-4 seconds away. Yeah, but the bomb was cooking for a lot longer. See, I just thought it blew out the first time watching it because I thought it was a thermal detonator. But then I looked closer and I noticed it was the same explosive device.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the second device. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the one that he threw. Yeah, the one he threw in there. Because they were the same explosive device. I thought that the one that he turned on and used as a grenade was a thermal detonator, the way that it sounded and the red light and the. But no, it had that little timer on it too.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's got to be an adjustable timer. He probably set the one that they put up in the tent for like 60 or 90 seconds. I mean, I'm sure the scene was longer because obviously it's going to be a cool fight scene or a cool shootout.
Yeah, I mean, they're fighting like 10 guys. And then the time they're fighting 10 guys and they start getting into the shootout, it's still going on. Or it's still, it's all
so ticking. Obviously, the short, easy answer is it has an adjustable timer. Has to.
Yeah.
So here's something else I want to talk about. Well, we'll kind of breeze through the plot a little bit because they fight, blah, blah. They take down the ATST. They fend off the villagers or they fend off the attackers. How did I describe them? The raiders. They fend off the raiders. Everything's all hunky dory. Then we'll get our next set of scenes, which we'll talk about in a second. But I want to talk about. When you fight Mando and he's got Baskar, this shit can take blaster bolts. Mm-hmm. How the fuck does no one break their hand trying to punch him?
Maybe they're tougher than humans.
They are humans. Okay.
Not all of them.
Hold on.
There's some
not
aliens.
All of them. But let's reference earlier in the episode when Kara and Mando fight. She's throwing head punches, chest punches. She knees him at one point. I mean, yeah, that'll still knock the breath out of Mando, but that shit's got to hurt the attacker, too.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I mean, it's a TV show. There's no way around it. Maybe they just have tougher skin, or maybe they're just not, like, when they're throwing the punches and they're getting blocks, they're not actually hitting the armor. They're kind of. Or it's not like full force going up against the armor. There is some.
Well, there's some soft spots where the armor, the armor is not like knight's armor where it covers every inch of his body. But
right.
Still, there's some times where she hits him in the head, hits him in the chest. And while that'll knock the breath out of him and disorient him, it just didn't seem to faze her. And the same when they're fighting later in the episode against the raiders. You know, now their species probably is stronger and tougher because they were throwing them around like a rag doll in some parts of it. But that would still have to hurt for a metal alloy that can handle blaster bolts.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's just used to it. You know, us, what's the difference between hitting aluminum and steel?
I don't know. Never to hit either.
Well, it's going to hurt just as no matter what, which one you hit, it's still going to hurt. But, when you're dealing with blaster bolts, they're just at a whole different other level to where it would start making that difference, between different metals. Does that make, what I mean?
I guess. I'm just saying it's got to hurt a little bit.
So, I mean, like, hell, you could punch wood and it would still hurt pretty damn bad. But if you're getting used to it, training on that shit, and, she seems pretty fucking tough. So she can, she's been in fights before, so she knows what she's doing. So I'm sure it. Just doesn't really hurt that much anymore.
Yeah, true. Just saying. That was my point. It's gotta hurt their hand somehow, some way.
Sure, man. I'm
sure. It's a little hard to believe.
Yeah. It's a fair point.
But yeah, to wrap up on the plot of this episode, Mando was gonna ditch Baby Yoda there. He's like, this child's really happy here, so I'm just gonna leave him here.
Skedaddle. Yeah.
The place on the bounty road is no place for him, so.
Here's another thing that I didn't get. So he's talking to Kara after this whole mission and was like, you should probably bounce. If you say for you to hit, a couple different spots and not stay here. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to leave the kid here. It should be safe. Like 10 seconds later, it's not safe for her, but it's safe for the kid. Who everybody in the guild had a bounty for. Like, come on.
Yeah, I think.
What are you thinking here, dude?
It's a little confusing because, the kid's got a tracking fob on him. And while we don't understand how it works, they're still going to be able to track him down somehow, some way.
Right.
I don't think you can leave him anywhere by himself. It doesn't matter how remote. If it's Hoth, Tatooine, whatever this planet was.
Probably why they had all the guards protecting him.
Probably. That would make sense. Whatever that freaking planet was. Tatooine. Tatooine 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
You get a pretty gut-wrenching scene. Because as we were just talking about, it's obviously going to be easy to track him down. And what happens at the end of this episode? A bounty hunter tracks him down.
And I remember watching that for the first time and thinking, don't you fucking do it. Don't you fucking do it. You better have that chick fucking behind him about to pull the damn trigger. And thank God she was there. Because I was having a heart attack there for a second.
Yeah, first time watching the episode, your heart races a little bit. You're like, oh my God, what's happening?
Fuck, my heart was still racing even watching it just before this episode. But then again, I was stoned.
Yeah, I was going to say. Mine wasn't, but then again, I was sober, so.
Yeah, you get a lot more into it when you're stoned. That's one of the great things I love about it. Everything just becomes so much funnier and better. Yeah. Except you do get paranoid and the munchies suck sometimes.
Yeah, but then I was gonna say, and then, you know, everyone goes on their merry way and that's the end of the episode. So another talking point I would like to bring up is we do get a lot of information in this episode about Mandalorian culture, because the lady who becomes very fond of the Mando, she is talking to him like, you know, she asked the question, how long since you've taken off the helmet? Mando's like, I took it off yesterday. I have to sleep somehow. Right. He didn't say that. That's my words. But, you know, so obviously Mandalorian, you know, this clan can take off their helmet. And then she asked the question, well, when was the last time you took it off in front of somebody? That's when he's looking at the kids. He goes, I wasn't much older than they are. So I'm guessing with this new clan of Mandalorians, I guess once they're accepted into the clan, I don't know. But he says it as, once you put on the helmet, you can't take it off in front of anyone.
Right.
So when he eats, he takes it off. When he eats by himself or whatever.
Yeah, but he was in the middle of a freaking window where anybody could just look over and see him.
Well, I know that's the funny part I was going to bring up. She brings him food. He's like, I can't take off my mask in front of you. Sorry. So she skedaddles. He takes off his helmet and it's like having a barn door open and you have kids playing 15 feet in front of the door. It's like all they have to do is turn and look at you and then, oh, you can't put your helmet back on ever again. What's the point of that?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, then again, everybody was, you know, focused on Baby Yoda.
True.
And if Baby Yoda was, like, sitting right in front of me right now, believe me, I'd be focused on Baby Yoda. I wouldn't be paying attention to what's going on behind me.
Another thing they bring up, or, you know, another thing I'm going to bring up, is he said he took the mask off the day before. He can't take it off in front of anyone. So I guess given that Baby Yoda's a child, he can't take it off in front of him. Was Baby Yoda sleeping? Did he have to go to his own part of the ship and put Baby Yoda down for a nap so he can take his helmet off and eat?
Probably. I mean, kid's a kid, so he's gonna need to take naps. Took a long ass nap after he used the Force, so.
And that's the thing, that's what I'm trying to figure out, and I hope they go into details with season two, is it's like, okay, can it, you know, does any life form or anything, you know, nothing can see him without his mask. So what if he's like taking care of a 3-day-year-old and his helmet comes off? Well, now he's shit out of luck because a 3-year-old or 3-day-old saw his face.
I don't know. I don't think so.
It's like, when can the rules be bent or broken? Well, I guess we'll bent because they can't be broken. No, hopefully, or later in this season. So the kicker for me for this episode is that at the end of it, Mando and Baby Yoda ride off back to the Razor Crest with a droid driving their hover speeder or whatever the hell it is. He's so anti-droid, he wouldn't accept a ride from a droid in the first episode. So why is, I guess because that's his only option, he has to?
I guess so. I mean, maybe he's just softening up the droids.
Well, I don't know.
Remember when he was being attacked by the guild? He rode on that cart with the droid.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, dire results, and he was still threatening to shoot it.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, he was still willing to get on then. What's the difference now? He's just not being attacked. He still needs the transport. So, what's he going to do? Walk?
Good. I mean, the guy did say it was about a day's journey on that day. Do they walk? I don't remember when they first met him, if they walk or if they took that little hover craft.
Oh, I don't know.
So, Chris, what did you think about this episode?
All right. Well, what did I think about this episode? I think it had some ups and its downs. I think that it had some really high highs, and there were some scenes where it's like, what? You know, and it was more frequent than previous episodes. But again, I thought there was a lot of really great scenes in it. And I think they were a lot of those reasons why you had those, wait, I'm confused moments, is one, because they want to build that, the drama or the suspense. They want to try and make these storylines exciting. And sometimes they're sacrificing, you know, the story making sense to add that drama or suspense. So, but for us, you know, really kind of paying attention more to the plot, the story, seeing how the story is written and how well that they keep up with it. And they've done very well in the past. This one, they didn't do as well, but again, it still had some really high highs. So I'd say, you know, not 9 out of 10, probably 8 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10.
Okay. I didn't think there was low lows. I thought it was a good, not great episode. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it. I thought it was directed very well. And we did get a lot of information about the Mandalorian culture that he's now a part of. Because that's the one thing that was confusing me watching this the first time, when it first came out, and even now, was in Clone Wars and in Rebels, there was no problems with Mandalorians taking off their helmets and talking face to face and showing their faces to others. Now it's a problem.
Right. So, and that's kind of where I threw out that suggestion. I think, what was it, last episode or was it two episodes ago, where it's like, maybe there's two kind of sects of it. You have the people who were the Mandalorians, and you have kind of that religion, which is Mandalorian, and that's practicing the religious beliefs. And, you know, that's why he's like, well, what guns are part of my religion? I'm a Mandalorian. Where the Mandalorians in the show were just kind of the people who occupy the planet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm just saying, I mean, and that's where I want them to go into greater detail of, and I don't know, I mean, I know I've seen this whole season, but I honestly don't remember how much more detail it gets into, but
I don't think it does.
I mean, it's like, give me the information I need to know. It just doesn't make sense entirely right now. And I know we covered it before. They must be
really
practicing
mad if they don't cover it.
Well, yeah.
In season
they
two?
Got to.
Yeah.
So that's all. I mean, we got good information here, but it's like, I need some more on what specifically they're practicing, because it differs from prior shows, and, well, they're not in the movies, so prior shows. Overall, good episode. I liked it.
Should we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat it.
Punch it,
kill
it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Hawk Knight!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right, well, it is agreed upon. Well, what do we have in store for next week's episode, brother?
So, next week's episode is titled, or is episode 5, entitled The Gunslinger. And it's brief, very brief synopsis is, on a familiar desert planet, that doesn't ring any bells, you're not a real Star Wars fan, the Mandalorian helps rookie bounty hunter who is in over his head. And I remember this episode, it's a good episode, I look forward to watching it. That's what's in store next time.
Well, I guess I'll do it for this week's episode.
Yeah, I guess that'll do it.
All right, well, thanks everyone for tuning in for this week's episode of Deep Space High. Be sure to check out our episode next week.
Don't forget to keep the conversation going over on Twitter with the hashtag Deep Space High. Find us on Facebook, where our page is called Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews. go ahead and give us a like. You'll get updates whenever we release a new episode and anything else going on with the show. You can also find us on Twitter with, it's our Twitter handle? I don't know. It's our Instahamel handle? I don't know what the hell it's called, but if you search Deep Space High Pod on Instagram, you'll find us.
We're not even that old, yeah.
I know. For someone my age, you'd think I would know the lingo, but...
God damn, we're really not
failing, old. Failing. Yeah, I know. I'm failing my generation.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. But yep, so go find us on Facebook, Instagram. We don't have a Twitter yet, but if you tweet or Insta hashtag Deep Space High, we'll find it.
Yeah, and don't forget to check us out on Apple Podcasts as well. If you like what you hear, be sure to leave a review or comment a review. God damn it, motherfucking... Just leave a review, all right? Just fucking go on Apple Podcasts and just fucking like, subscribe, review, and just listen. All right? I'm Sky Marshall Chris, and that'll do it. We should almost do that.
It's more like, all right, people, we're having issues wrapping this episode up. But if you like what you hear, just go ahead and just please leave us a review and make it good. Just reference the earlier episode since we're not finishing on a good note.
Yeah, exactly.
Just leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You know, like it, share it, subscribe it. Don't forget about it. I almost said forget about it, but don't forget about
don't
it.
Forget about it. Don't pull on me.
Enjoy
don't
us
get
next
stoned
time.
And miss it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So Chris is the guy, Marshall Chris. I'm Jedi Master Steve, and
yeah, may the Schwartz be with you.